Yes, indeed. My Car Guru is on the air for this Monday morning, and we welcome in the Car Guru, Lenny Lawson. Hey, Lenny.
I buckled up into an Electra 225 last week. I hadn't driven an old big boat like that in a while. Amazing how much cars have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the car that Tara and I took to Cincinnati this weekend to see my grandson was a 2019 Lincoln Continental that we leased back then. And we just needed a good road car. We felt like we were going to be making a lot of trips
mm-hmm.
back and forth to Cincinnati to see our grandson. So I just decided to do that rather than put a bunch of miles on new cars. And I really enjoyed that car. It's a shame that I understand why Lincoln Ford decided to discontinue the Continental, because cars in general just aren't selling. But man, what a car! All-wheel drive, 400 horsepower. It pretty much does everything you could ever want a car to do and more.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the modern day luxury car. And so you go back to 1977 and you think, okay, well, what was an American luxury car back then? Well, it didn't handle very well. You could steer it with one finger, probably your pinky.
Mm-hmm.
It floated. When you hit a bump, you didn't know it. The suspension alone was so soft, and so different
mm-hmm.
from the modern car. Big bench seat with fold down armrest. You look at the mirrors, the adjustable mirrors, now that's all electronic. Back then they had cables. They had the features, a lot of the features that modern cars do, but they just did it in a different way.
Yeah.
But so it was just kind of a step back in time driving that car. So this car that I purchased is a 1976 Buick Electra 225 Limited, two-door. It's a coupe, as they say in France. As they say in England, probably. It's a 455 V8, plenty of power. The thing that I noticed driving it is that the A-pillar, the pillars, basically the frame that goes around the windshield, were so thin back then. I mean, it was a great car for traveling around the country and being able to see out.
Mm-hmm.
They have had to make those things so much thicker now just for safety purposes, in order to meet all the crash standards. I would worry about somebody else crashing into that big Buick, Tim, more so than I would worry about myself. That thing is huge. It did have, back in 77, they did have shoulder harnesses and lap belt combination. We went for a period there, I don't know if you recall, back in the mid-70s, where, shoulder harnesses were really not real popular. I remember in 1972, they were actually strapped to the roof up there. And if you wanted to plug them in, you could, but it was optional.
Yeah.
The lap belt was all there was to hold you in the car.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was just kind of fun, kind of reminiscent of what the business used to be like. Did your parents have a big boat like that, or what did they drive?
Well, my dad for many years had a 1961 Cadillac that he liked a lot. Had the big tail fin, big tail fins on.
Yeah.
It was black, and he drove that. And then I think after that, the car that he drove the most was a Buick LeSabre. He liked Buicks a lot. And so he had a LeSabre for many years. It was a 72 model, I think, that he had.
Yeah.
And, it was pretty big. It wasn't as big as the Electra 225, but it was pretty good size. But he had a couple of station wagons that were really big, a Plymouth Fury station wagon, and then he had a big Chevrolet station wagon, a 76 model that was pretty lengthy. He also had a Roadmaster station wagon at one time. So he had his share of big cars. Now, my uncle, who lived in Indiana, had a big Electra 225 for a while.
Well, those cars, General Motors had a definitely a stratified type of marketing plan. where, you know, when you came in, the entry-level car was Chevrolet. Of course, the biggest car that we sold in the 70s was the Chevrolet Caprice. Mm-hmm. We did sell the Impala as well, but same body, mm-hmm. but the Caprice was a fancier trim. But it was not built on the same chassis as, like, the big Buick, the big Oldsmobile 98, the Cadillac Sedan DeVille. Those were all built on a similar chassis with some differences. Do you remember when you opened the door on a GM car, what it said on the rocker panel there as to who built the body of the car?
Body by Fisher.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, back in those days, well, early on, you know, in the 30s and 20s and 30s, car makers, with the exception of Henry Ford and a few others, used a different body company to actually manufacture the sheet metal and the actual body of the car. The chassis, the frame, and the engine and the drivetrain was all made by the manufacturer. For example, Duesenberg, you know, or you look at Duesenberg, Packard, any of those old, big old cars, the actual chassis, the grill was always made by the car maker, but the bodies were done by coach builders. Mm-hmm. And Fisher Body was one of the ones that General Motors used and then used exclusively, and then eventually GM took over Fisher Body, and now you don't see that that label on the cars anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, now it's still, there was so much more of the car was actually built by a division of General Motors or Ford. Now you have all these outside suppliers. We just sold seven new Nissans to a company called SRK down in Mohawk Bulls Gap area in Greene County. They have a big plant down there at the park where they have all, and there's a number of plants down there. And but SRK is a supplier to a bunch of different car makers, and so that's the way it is now. And that's what's happening with this chip shortage right now. We've got the Ford, GM, Chrysler, Nissan, Honda, Toyota, they don't make much anything. All they do is assemble vehicles. Typically, the car makers are responsible for building their own engines and, of course, all of the design aspect of the car. But just about everything on the car is made by a different company, mm-hmm. and it's all made for just-in-time delivery so that the car maker doesn't have to, or the assembler doesn't have to, you know, have a lot of storage for parts and all of this stuff. You know, they don't buy a bunch of parts and put them in a warehouse and wait till it's time for the car to roll down the assembly line. These parts arrive just in time. And, on a daily basis, shipments are being received at the plant on an hourly basis even to make sure that red seat ends up in that silver car. And that's just the way it works. Well, with the chip shortage, it's really, it's basically put everything on hold. When you think about the industry and the impact that it's having, it is absolutely unprecedented, Tim, what has happened. We've got huge demand right now for new cars.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't get the cars or the trucks. I was just going through the different dealers in the Tri-Cities. And I'll tell you right after the break, I'll tell you what the impact is locally, as if you've been out there. If you haven't seen it, then you're getting ready to hear about it. We'll be back here in just a minute. I went to five different dealers' websites this morning just to see what their inventories are like. If you go to JohnsonCityToyota.com or, you know, or FriendshipFord.com, any of the dealers, you can click on new vehicles. And then it will tell you how many new vehicles they have in stock. Most people don't notice that. They just start looking for, you know, an F-150 or a Toyota Tacoma or whatever. But it'll show you how many vehicles they have in stock, or at least that are posted on the website, which typically is everything they have in stock. And also incoming inventory sometimes will hit the website before it actually arrives at the dealership. But here's five dealerships. This one dealership would normally have 350 cars in stock, mm-hmm. you know, because they're a really big dealer. They've got 75. Here's one that would normally have about 250. They have 72. Here's one that would normally have about 250. They've got 80. These are all, you know, really large dealerships. Here's one smaller store would normally have about 150. They've got 40 in stock.
Hmm.
So, you know, what shoppers are finding is that when they go online, obviously, they're not able to find what they're interested in as easily. Also, when they go to the lot, people are telling me they're just amazed, you know, how empty the car lots are. You drive up and down the motor mile, you'll see it. Now, Nissan has not been as affected, thank goodness. We're Ford and Nissan at Gateway, and our Nissan inventory is completely full. You know, we're at normal volume. Now, there are certain restrictions to that. Altimas are more susceptible to the chip shortage, and Versa, which is the small, inexpensive, our smallest car that we sell and least expensive Nissan, those are in pretty tight supply. But just about everything else is flowing pretty well. Now, what we're seeing on the horizon is that a lot of the new product announcements are being, a lot of the vehicles have been announced that they're coming, and people have placed orders, but they're already having to scale back on the commitments. The Ford Bronco is one of them. I hated to see that in the news, but they said that they're actually having to shut down Bronco production for a while until they can come up with some computer chips. We looked at our inventory this morning. You know, when I come into work, I want to make sure, you know, that if there's any personnel issues, people are sick or not available for work for one reason or another, or if somebody's, you know, I just want to make sure that we have a full staff. I want to make sure that we have, you know, what our inventory situation is so that we can make plans as far as if we need to go to the auction, you know, and buy used cars, or if, you know, what new product that we have coming. So I sat down with my Nissan manager, and we went through that, and everything's rosy. Sat down with my Ford manager, and everything's not rosy. I said, okay, well, what do we actually have coming in? And he gave me a number, and I said, that's it? He said, yep, that's pretty much it. And he said, let me see all this list of cars. So we had like 30 cars, Tim, that are listed as in storage right now. So when I say cars, I'm talking trucks, primarily, and SUV. And so these are vehicles that have been partially built. Then I guess, Tim, I don't know whether these things are drivable, you know, or whether they're, you know, whether they have to tow them, you know, out to this storage lot. Boy, that would be a nightmare, wouldn't it? Can you imagine how many rollbacks and stuff they would need?
Yeah.
To be able to fill up the parking lots? They must make them drivable. I would say more than likely what's not installed is probably the radio or the infotainment system. Here's some other components. I'd say the engine and stuff like that is pretty much there so that they can fill up these parking lots with them. I had a good customer of mine that was traveling through from Lexington to Louisville and headed on out west, and they went by and saw these huge parking lots just full of cars. And those are vehicles that we can't get right now. And so the impact of that is choice, obviously. I had a guy came in the end of last week, wanted to order an F-350. He has an F-250 now and has decided he wants to go up in capacity, maybe buying a new camper, one that's heavier than the one he has. He said, when do you think I could get it? And I said, man, I just don't know. There is just no way for me to tell you when this vehicle is going to come in. Most of the people that I encounter that are in here buying cars or shopping, you know, they are clueless to this dilemma. And like I say, it's unprecedented. I mean, I understand it is not something that that we are used to. But it's here, and we will deal with it. You know, I have also been talking about used car values, and that used car values have been skyrocketing, especially trucks. And had a guy last week, my nephew was telling me about this customer came in with a Toyota Tundra. And it was a two-year-old Toyota Tundra, and the book value of that vehicle was around $42,000, okay, mm-hmm. which is very high. You know, it's just a really big number based on the age and mileage. I think he had about 40-some thousand miles on it. And so my nephew asked him, what did you pay for this vehicle, you know, back in 2018? He said $42,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth what he paid for it new, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what we've noticed last week was, you know, every month the book values have give you this projection of what they think a particular vehicle is going to be worth next month. And all of those have been green numbers. They've all been going up in really just unprecedented ways. We would see an F-150, and then we would see what they anticipate the book value being next month, and it was like plus $3,500. I mean, imagine a vehicle going up that much. I mean, you just wonder, it's kind of like buying gold. You know, when do you buy it, and when do you sell it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now may be the time, because this is the first week, Tim, that we have actually seen those numbers level off. We have seen the projection for next month be actually equal to this month or down a little bit. So this may be the point where you want to go ahead and trade if, of course, you can find what you're looking for, and that's a pretty big if right now. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're looking for a Chevrolet or a Ram truck or a Ford truck or, you know, just about any other vehicle out there. It's going to be in short supply, and you're going to see dealers basically offering smaller discounts and also, if any discount in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And then the manufacturer rebates have all but disappeared on some vehicles. We were seeing, Tim, $3,500, $4,000 rebate vehicles. Now they're $500 or less. And so anyway, if you're out shopping, you know, all of the incentives have been announced already for May, and you're pretty much safe that the rebates will stay the same throughout the entire month of May, but then they may go down again in June.
Yeah.
So this may be a very good time to go out and make that purchase decision. The peak of the used car market may be right now, and the as far as the availability of product, like I say, it's not out there, but it's going to be even worse in June. So you might as well go out and try to find what you want now and take a stab at putting a deal together. But we'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute.
All right, back here for the final couple of minutes of My Car Guru on a Monday morning. So the guru says now may be the time to make your move.
Yeah, yep. We had some folks come up from somewhere in Louisiana and purchase an F-150 that we had, an XLT. It was one of the Power Boost F-150s, which is the hybrid, mm-hmm. and has the 7,200 volt generator on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe they're anticipating some bad weather, you know, hitting them down there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a long drive. You know, you think about somebody coming that far. They found it online and submitted a request for us to hold the vehicle and sent us a $1,000 down payment, and then came and picked it up this past weekend.
Yeah,
you're seeing that more and more. You know, remember when we used to tune cars up, when you know, used to replace spark plugs and
mm-hmm.
and plug wires and fuel filters and
sure.
Sometimes you know, a tune up was something that was. I remember when I first got into the business in the 70s. Chevrolet recommended that you give your car, you change the spark plugs every 12,000 miles.
Yeah.
And then they came out with electronic ignitions, and then they pushed that up to 25,000 miles. And now they say 100,000 maybe. tune-ups are not what they used to be. Some of the stuff that we used to do was like cleaning or replacing the carburetor, replacing the rotor, the distributor cap, the rotor, the spark plug wires, the fuel filter, the timing belt, inspecting oxygen sensors, inspecting electronic control module components, inspecting and adjusting the engine timing and idle. You know, so much of that now is done by the car itself. We don't adjust timing anymore.
Yeah.
We do replace spark plugs, but, you know, just only if we see a problem or if there's a check engine light. Now it's pretty much about keeping your oil changed, changing your transmission fluid if necessary, replacing your coolant. You know, we still have to inspect belts and replace when necessary, but the things that used to leave you stranded on the side of the road really just don't happen that much. You know, tires don't blow out as often as they used to. Tire technology has gotten so much better. So just make sure when you go in and get automotive service that the people that you're dealing with are sticking with the owner's manual, the recommendations in the book. A lot of this extra stuff that they try to sell you is just because they're trying to make up for what they lost since they can't do tune-ups anymore. So, make sure that you just pull out that owner's manual and go by what it says, and you'll be fine. I got an owner's manual with my new Kubota tractor, and, it has the different maintenance intervals are based on how many hours it has on it. And so it has little dots right beside everything that needs to be done. And so, I'm going to stick with that, and don't really need to do anything extra, and you don't need to do anything extra to your car. Otherwise, you may just be padding the pocket of the shop where you're getting your service work done. So, I'm sorry about the situation we're in. There's nothing much I can do about it as far as product availability. Just be careful when you're out there shopping. Don't pay too much. If you need any help, give me a call. My cell phone is 552-2020, and I'll be glad to help you out.
552-2020, again, is the number for the Car Guru, Lenny Lawson. Lenny, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.